Hello and welcome to the first NABBW teleseminar of 2017. It's been a while since we've had the opportunity to share a chat with one of our favorite guests, Pam Sams, who's always such a wealth of excellent information on financial topics of interest to baby boomers. In the past, Pam and I have spent a lot of time talking about how to get our financial houses in order as we look forward to retirement, or maybe we aren't looking forward to it, but we see that it's around the bend. This is a subject that we've often discussed, financial improvements, as I continue to be disturbed with the news that our, that is baby boomers' financial health, is not as good as we had all thought it would be when we were younger. At one time, society viewed us as the healthiest, wealthiest, and best-educated demographic to ever live, but life has a way of surprising us, and I read recently a report from a place called PwC Employee Financial Wellness Survey, and Pam, you're probably familiar with that, but it said that baby boomer retirement savings vary widely, but roughly half of all of us boomers have set aside only $100,000 or less, and more worrisome, according to the report, over a third of baby boomers have saved less than $50,000 for retirement, and there's only 15% of us who have accumulated nest eggs north of $500,000, an amount that could generate the kind of retirement income necessary for us to maintain a standard of living that we might have been used to in our working lives. You probably have much more information on that, Pam, but that's something that when I went searching, it popped up in the top of the Google search and certainly caught my attention. So tonight, rather than wringing our hands over these figures or moaning about how half of us are probably going to work till we die because we can't afford to retire, our topic is the much more proactive topic, 10 Tips for Achieving Financial Wellness. But before we get started with that, let me introduce your presenters. I'm Ann Holmes, your moderator and the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, an organization dedicated to educating and empowering women at midlife. And I'm speaking with one of our favorite guest experts, Pamela J. Sams, CRPC, a chartered retirement planning counselor and NABBW's retirement planning associate. I think you might have another certification there, Pam, that I forgot. So if that's true, you'll have to let me know before we get the call done with. Pam is an expert in personal finance and a frequent guest who covers important information related to money and financial planning, something too many of us baby boomer women don't know enough about. President of Jackson Sams Financial Services and Financial Advisor, Pam focuses on helping women understand the importance of financial and retirement planning by placing their needs first. She believes sound investment management starts with understanding each woman's goals. So before she works with any new client on investment decisions, she takes that new client through the proper steps in developing a financial plan. Thanks for joining us again tonight, Pam.
Thank you very much for having me, Ann. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, it is. We always have great conversations, and I'm looking forward to this one. So 10 tips for achieving financial wellness sounds like a really cool topic. I like, you know, when we can have numbers and check them off as we go through. But so let's start right away because there's 10, and I want to make sure we can try to get through them all. You say that the first one, point number one, is track your spending, develop budget, cut unnecessary expenses, and use a 50-30-20 rule. And
yes,
I think
yes,
we should start with that.
Yeah, we should definitely start with that one. But I do want to go back and kind of talk about, you know, the stats that you mentioned in the beginning of the phone call, is that it is unfortunately true where we're just not saving enough as boomers towards retirement. And like you said, you know, we kind of had our grand heyday in the 80s and the 90s and, you know, spent a lot of our discretionary expenses, money on toys, you know, the latest greatest and, you know, new houses and cars and all of that, and really just did not plan accordingly in terms of the future. So, yes, a lot of us have, you know, maybe 100,000, the latest, like you said, most women have, you know, 50 or less. And unfortunately, one in five will have to rely pretty much on Social Security as their only source of income because they haven't saved enough. So that's really concerning to a lot of people that are out there who really want to know how to do the best that they can with their money right now, before, you know, they retire or at least start getting close to retirement. So the first one is, you know, since we're kind of close to the beginning of this year, 2017, is that a lot of times people, you know, towards the beginning of the year, you know, really make those resolutions on, I'm going to, you know, finally do the best that I can with my money and, you know, and other, you know, things, health and wealth and, you know, living a better life. So it's always a healthier new you for the new year. So the financial piece is always one of those. So I always tell people, you know, kind of number one part of achieving financial wellness is really get a handle of your expenses. You know, really tracking what's coming in and what's going out, and developing a sound budget, and not overspending. Because that, you know, coming off of a holiday, I'm sure a lot of people, you know, had extra gifts and Christmas presents and, you know, all of these things that they were buying. And now the credit card bills start to come in January, February on those things that we purchased back during the holidays. So really getting an understanding of what's coming into your household on a net basis, because that's, you know, after Uncle Sam takes this portion, whatever you get in your paycheck, how much you're spending out on certain items. So really developing that budget on what needs to go to, you know, credit card debt, savings, of course, your household bills. And then looking at anything, especially, you know, I use this exercise towards the beginning of the year with most of my clients, is that looking at some of those unnecessary expenses. Sometimes we just go on a day-to-day basis and we're spending things that we don't even use anymore. You know, there's subscriptions that we're still paying for. There's, you know, maybe different movie subscriptions like Netflix or Hulu and things like that that you may or may not be using on a regular basis. So really looking at where money's going, or are there some things that you can cut out of your budget that you're not using anymore, and or, you know, maybe it was a luxury at one point, but, you know, if in order to kind of tighten up the purse strings a little bit, maybe you don't need that particular item any longer. So really looking at cutting some of those unnecessary expenses. And in terms of the 50-30-20 rule, what you want to do is look at your net income. 50% of that should go to your needs, meaning, you know, your food, housing, all of the things that you that are necessity items. And then the 30% goes to wants, those niceties that you can have in terms of kind of discretionary spending, and then 20% towards debt and or savings. So if you use that rule, making sure you're paid all of your essential expenses that you need, and then everything else gets into the want category and things you also have to pay off, you should, you know, be in pretty good footing in terms of tracking your expenses, developing a budget, and keeping in line with that 50-30-20 rule.
All right. So just because my parents always raised me that I needed to tithe and put 10% toward my church or towards good works types of things, where would that 10% fit into your 50-30-20?
Yes, and so if you're going to do like that, then that 20%, if you were going to do that, 10% probably goes to debt and then 10% to savings, and so you still have 20% with that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that really makes you look at not accumulating a whole lot of debt if you don't want more than 10% of your income going towards debt, especially if you're going to do savings programs and tithing and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's where, you know, people get into trouble where, you know, it's more of a, I want it now, so I'll put in my credit and I'll worry about the payment later. But then you start seeing where those debt payments on a month-to-month basis are really adding up, and they can end up cutting into some of those other 50%, 30% on the, you know, needs and wants. I mean, I'm sure you could probably take it out of the 30% because those are just wants, but, you know, why pay debt when you can get something nice for yourself?
exactly.
with, you know. So you don't want to do that. I always tell people, you know, you're going to be paying for the, you know, if you don't pay off your credit card bills on a month-to-month basis, you can be paying for that new outfit and shoes for, like, you know, 5 years.
Right.
So you don't want to do that.
By which time you're
so
probably
you
not even wearing
sure
them anymore.
Them. Yeah, and you're not even wearing it. It's back in the closet. You've given it away or whatever the case may be. So really
mm-hmm.
looking at, you know, as an exercise towards the beginning of the year, how can I present myself the best that I can financially? First, you really have to know your financial situation and where you are. Can I start trimming some of the expenses out and stick to a really good rule of thumb with the 50-30-20 in order to not get in trouble, you know, for the
mm-hmm.
rest of the year? You know, if you set some boundaries towards the beginning, then it gives you a little more flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Do you find that your clients have need for a little training session on how to develop a budget, or do most of them really know how to do it? They just don't want to, haven't done it because it's easy to let it go.
Well, I think it's a combination of both. You know, I always say that budget is the other bad B word, I guess, out there
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
you can hear. Because a lot of people, you know, kind of consider budget as kind of, quote, the being deprived. You know, if I put myself
right.
on a budget, you know,
right.
then I really can't have these things. So I call it, you know, instead of budget, it's more of cash flow management. It's a little
okay.
more a nice term
mm-hmm.
than budget. So if you look at your cash flow management of, you know, what buckets am I spending my money on? And are there ways to not spend as much in certain categories? You know, the one that's,
mm-hmm.
that's really notorious for most people, especially, you know, parents and things like that who are on the go, is eating out a lot. So
mm-hmm.
you buy groceries, but then you're also eating out. So, you know, you have
right.
two food expenses there. Are there ways to, you know, either pack a lunch or, you know, say that I'm only going to eat out, you know, a couple of times a month, or, you know, whatever you want to, you know, put as a dollar amount on. I'm not going to spend over X amount of dollars for eating out or for lunch
mm-hmm.
or, you know, all
right.
of those other things, especially if you buy groceries.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, some of those categories you can take a look at and merely just kind of put parameters on there. And it's, you know, one that I use that I recommend a lot is mint.com. Has some really
mm-hmm.
good cash management, cash flow management tools that, you know, really look at, you know, you attach it to your bank account, and then comes in a really nice app if you use a smartphone, where it makes nice little pie charts on how you're spending your money on a month-to-month basis. And then you can kind of see it as a visual versus,
mm-hmm.
You know, having to kind of track it manually and write everything down. You know, picture is worth a thousand words. So if you look at,
right.
oh, my gosh, I spent over $500 last month on food, you know,
mm-hmm.
between eating out, you know, so let's say groceries were $300, but you end up spending $200 for eating out, you know, are there
right.
ways to trim that extra $200 where, you know, you can, you know, reallocate that to maybe paying down some debt if you have that, an extra, you know, IRA payment or something like that. So you have to really look at where things are going. And that's one of the things that, you know, especially that I emphasize with boomers as we start getting closer to retirement, is having a good handle on that. Because once you start creating your retirement income, you know, it's not that you get a paycheck every 2 weeks like you did when you were working.
Right.
You get it once a month or for Social Security or taking it from other resources. So you really have to get an understanding of where spending is going, where your money's going on a month-to-month basis. And that's one of the exercises that I really emphasize, especially as you get closer, you know, that 5 years before retirement, getting that a really pinpoint detail as much as we can on what's going out, what's coming in, and are there ways to kind of trim the fat from there.
Excellent. All right. Well, your second tip is just as important and kind of goes along with that. It's set financial goals.
Yeah. Now, setting financial goals, then everything that you work towards usually has some type of price tag.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, instead of, you know, I want to you know, buy a new car, you know, how are you going to, you know, go about that? How much do you want to put down? You know, where are you going to get the resources? Are you going to finance and things like that? So really the setting your financial goals is everything that you want to achieve, especially, like I said, during this time of the year where you're kind of sitting down on what you want to accomplish for this year, is put everything out. You know, that's why I really emphasize the financial plan on, okay, I want to perhaps, you know, pay down, you know, the debt this year. You know, what type of strategy do I have for that? Maybe you need to replace your car this year. So that will have its own goal and its own strategy. Of course, you're still continuing to save for retirement. And then you may want to buy a new house or, you know, downsize or whatever the case may be. So really outlining all of those goals in a sound financial plan, and then basically putting a strategy in place for each of those financial goals so you can see what needs to be done. So if you need to come up with a down payment for, you know, to replace your car, you know, are you going to trade your old car in? Or are you going to take some from savings, or, you know, are there deals out there where you can get rebates back? So doing the research and kind of putting all of the strategies for implementation in place once you have all of the financial goals outlined that you want to achieve this year and, of course, you know, and beyond for each year. You always want to kind of sit down and say, okay, what are my financial goals for this year? You know, of course, some are always going to be ongoing, like your retirement, but that's an exercise that I use with my clients at the beginning of each year, or at least at the end of the year, if I don't get a chance to see them towards the beginning, is what do you want to accomplish financially for 2017? And then we kind of put it all in their financial plan, and then I know, you know, what targets that we need to meet, you know, for per quarter, you know, per, you know, semi-annually, so at the six-month mark, where are you, and then towards the end of the year. So making sure you're aware of what needs attention financially in any given year, and the type of strategy and game plan do you have to work towards those. So that's why I said, you know, set those financial goals and then really put them in place. And then, you know, if, you know, kind of visit them on a continuous basis, then just kind of set them there and say, okay, you know, I set them and that's it. You know, do you want to take a look at your goals and making sure you're tracking them? If you're not working with a professional, really looking at, you know, how, you know, let's say March will be, you know, the third month of the year, be at the end of the first quarter. But, you know, if I'm doing, you know, saving for retirement or whatever the case may be, there are benchmarks on where you need to be at certain times of the year. So, you know, having some type of outline or roadmap on, you know, these are my benchmarks. Am I close? Am I behind? What do I need to do to catch up? You know, am I on track? You know, do I get a good start? All of those sort of things. So really kind of putting those financial goals in place for yourself. For every year, you want to kind of revisit all of those, you know, so things will come, things will go, some things you want to achieve, some things you may have accomplished, you check those off, but really having a really good set of financial goals at any at the beginning of the year is really good to keep track of.
Excellent. Now, does that is there on Mint a place where you can keep track of your financial goals, or is there another app that you like for goal setting?
No, actually, that I think it's one on there that you can you know, put your financial goals as well. You know, Mint also has a lot of I guess commercials on it. So, you know, when you put in your financial goals there, they may have other, you know, maybe the credit card with less interest, or, you know, certain things that you may want to take advantage of as well. So, you know, kind of pick the things that work for you, but don't get overwhelmed with, you know, stuff that they're kind of pushing at you. See what works best for your particular situation, and then everything else you don't have to worry about. But, yeah, there is a spot in there where you can do set your financial goals. You know, so if it's I want to put X amount of dollars per month towards paying down my debt, you can put that in there. I want X amount of dollars for retirement. You know, so, I mean, it's a light version of it, you know, really having a really good financial plan. You know, if you do one on your own, there's a lot of different ways to do it. But Mint has kind of a light version of a place to keep your financial goals, and so you can keep track of them.
All right. Your third tip, I like the sound of this one, create a money calendar. I think what you're saying about that is that you know that as you look forward toward the year, there's going to be certain times like when you were a student, you know, when the tuition is going to be due and that sort of thing. Is that
exactly
where you're going with the money calendar?
Yep, that's exactly where I'm going with the money calendar. And unfortunately, a lot of people, you know, don't have one, you know, just kind of, you know, work off the cuff. Of course, we know when certain months, certain things are due per month, but if you can, like I said, pictures worth a thousand words. So if you can have a calendar, you know, either get a new calendar or keep one, you know, online, is that when all of the bills due, so you can see it visually, you know, of course, you know, when taxes are due, you'll have, you know, April 15th on there. But then, you know, if you do have important financial things that are that need to be represented on your calendar, like you said, when tuition is due, if you have college students, you know, when do I need to apply for financial aid if you have a college student? When do I need to, you know, if you're a small business owner, you know, the tax deadline is different from your personal
right.
one. So March 15th is for, you know, self-employed people. So you put that on there. So each time that you have, you know, some type, of course, with all of your regular bills and when they're due, all of the significant money decisions or things that when they're due or when you have to make decisions about them should be represented on a money calendar, so you can, you know, at all times know when things are due, what you need to do financially, what type of decisions you need to make, you know, based on when certain things come due in any particular month. So that's, you know, creating that money calendar will really kind of get you peace of mind, so you're not, you know, scrambling when things come up, you know, stuff, especially, you know, the regular bills are easy, but things like, you know, in the state of Virginia where I am, you know, there's personal property tax and that's due, you know, twice a year and one's in May and one's in October. So, you know, keeping those on the calendar as well and also having a game plan on how, you know, if you're going to take it out of savings or you're going to kind of accumulate, you know, as you go. I always tell people if they have things that they're paying throughout the year that are not monthly, try to basically make it into a monthly payment. You may not be paying it out, but you're putting it someplace. So, you know, if you pay $600 for the year, you know, there's $50 that should be going somewhere in a savings account to pay for, let's say, personal property tax or whatever that's due at, you know, those odd times of the year. In order to take advantage of not being caught off guard and also having those represented on the calendar so you know when those are due and when you need to make decisions on those. So getting yourself a really nice one, either electronic version or, you know, if you're really into paper and you like having a nice calendar, you know, you'll probably have the church calendar or whatever that you use for your regular dates, but having a separate money calendar where you can have all of that kind of pinpoint it out would be a really good good idea to do. Along with that is that you also want to make sure you real estate taxes, anything, like I said, that has a date on there. You really want to make sure it's on your money calendar. And, you know, don't make it a chore. You know, just really, you know, kind of glance at it and make sure you reference it. And also, this is what I was going to say. Sorry, I lost my train of thought before, is that you want to make sure you, you know, if you do it by yourself or if you're a couple, have a financial powwow at some point. You know, you can decide if it's every Sunday or you can decide if it's quarterly or, you know, whatever. You know, for me and my husband, we call it Financial Sunday. So every Sunday we kind of touch base, okay, what happened this week? You know, what do you have coming up that we need to allocate for? You know, this is kind of the state of affairs, you know, things like that. So you want to make sure you have, you know, some point, even if, you know, if you're working as a couple, you have a powwow. If you work, you know, if you're single and you're doing it by yourself, still allocate some time to deal with your finances. So either if that's, you know, kind of balancing your checkbook and, you know, kind of looking at those budget categories that I talked about, you know, how your spending went that week or that month or whatever, you know, time that you set aside for that. But you really want to make sure that, you know, it's not one of those things that, is dreading it, you know, kind of make a fun date out of it, you know, maybe have a glass of wine, mm-hmm. sit aside and some time to say, okay, I'm going to look at, you know, my Mint account this week and see where I spent money on and things like that. So don't mm-hmm. make it a drudgery chore,
right.
But maybe put some, you know, some little special thing around. And it doesn't have to be long, maybe, you know, 45 minutes to an hour, even, you know, less than that if you keep up on it on a regular basis, but have sometimes set aside where you're, you know, really focusing in on that so you don't have to have it piled up. You know, I always have that time of year when people want to come and see me, but then they will say, hey, let's wait until after tax season because I'm gathering all this stuff up because, you know, I haven't dealt with it, and now it's April 15th and I have to do this. So mm-hmm. don't wait until it's some big to-do to kind of pile everything together. Try to work incrementally on your finances and set aside some time so you're not overwhelmed when it gets to these, you know, big events like the taxes or, you know, when you're mm-hmm. applying for, you know, applications for loans and things like that. If you have everything in a nice binder or folder that you kind of visit on a regular basis, it becomes less stressful when you have to pull things together.
Oh, it really does. I can speak from experience. Before I married Steve, I used to have a big envelope, you know, like a 13x9 mm-hmm. envelope or something, and I put all my receipts that I knew because I had a job where I was using my car and eating out for work and that sort of stuff. So I put all my receipts that should be tax deductible, I just threw them into this big envelope. And then mm-hmm. at the end of the year when I was doing my taxes, I would have to sort all of them out into the different categories.
Yeah.
And so the first year that Steve and I were married, he was being, you know, he's a very financially organized person, and he was trying to be mm-hmm. helpful for me. And he said, I'll do your taxes for you. I have a day off, and I'll be happy to do your taxes. So I got my big envelope, and I gave it to him. He just about died.
He probably said, what is this? I used to work in an accountant's office, for a little bit. And I saw people with boxes of receipts that used to just mm-hmm. kind of dump it on the accountant's office. Okay, here you go. You can
right.
deal with it. And they're looking like, oh, my goodness. You know, like you said, you have to set aside all of the receipts and categorize them and, you know, mm-hmm. all of that. And you have all kind of, you know, different odd sizes of paper that you're dealing
right.
with.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that, you know, you're not one of those people who just kind of dump it in there. Oh, I'll deal with it later. So if you set aside,
right.
you know, some really good time per month mm-hmm. or per week or however often you want to do it and say, okay, now I'm going to categorize these receipts and then kind of, you know, maybe even scan them. You know, they have these really mm-hmm. nice neat scanners that categorize all these things for you. So you can, you know, just kind of keep electronic copies. Of course, you have to keep those for the IRS, you know, the actual receipts,
right.
but at least you'll have it someplace where, you know, it's organized. You can, you know, push a button, and then when you have to take it to the accountant there, you know, to deal with it, it's not, you know, all of these crazy-looking documents that are just,
mm-hmm.
Not organized. So you want to make sure
right.
you do that on a regular basis so you're not over, you know, because that, you know, I'm sure, you know, is overwhelming if you have to deal with a whole box of receipts and then all of
right.
these different statements that you're dealing with and all of that at one particular point in time, that can
mm-hmm.
become very stressful and overwhelming. So if you know, I always, you know, explain to clients, if you do it in bite-sized pieces, it doesn't hurt as much.
You
know? Right.
Yeah.
If you just kind of, you know, do a little bit here, a little bit there, you know, I'm not, mm-hmm. you know, asking for the world right now. I said, okay, if you can just go home and get this together for me, then, you know, it makes it a lot easier than, you know, if I ask for this, 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 and that, you know, it becomes a lot more stressful for people.
Mm-hmm. Now, your next tip number four, I think has become a lot easier than it once was, and that your tip is check your credit score. I've noticed now that there's some commercials on TV where they claim that some credit card companies will put your credit score on your statement every month. I don't have an account with that company, but But I would think that that sort of thing makes it a lot easier for people to keep track of the fluctuations, if there are any, in their credit score.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of people who are still, even, despite, you know, those things that are out there, you know, that have Credit Karma, which is free, they have a compilation of different scores. So it's not actually your FICO score that you get from there, but it's a, you know, it may be off a couple of points. It's not, you know, totally off, but, you know, it gives you a good indication of where your credit score is. And you want to keep track of at least running knowing what your score is, because, you know, at any given time, you may want to, you know, refinance your house or get another loan or buy a car or do something, you know, and not knowing, you know, where you stand in terms of your credit score really, you know, puts you behind the curve, because you can just kind of walk into the place where you're going to get the loan, and then all of a sudden, they're, you know, saying, okay, you know, your interest rate's going to be, you know, this, or you've been denied altogether and you had no clue on what's been going on with your credit report or score. So you don't want to get caught off guard. So you want to check your credit score at least once a year. Annually, you get the annualcreditreport.com, you know, not the free credit report, because that usually has some type of, I think it's free for a while, and then it may be a subscription-based, but annualcreditreport.com. Allows you to get access to your credit report, all three of your credit bureau reports annually. You get one. The credit score may be on there. You may have to pay a little extra for your credit score, but you want to make sure you at least check that annually. And then also, of course, if you're going to get any type of credit or loans or anything that you're applying for, know that beforehand before you start negotiating and doing any of that, because, you know, you want to make sure, you know, because they're going to run it and they're going to know what it is. So you want to know what it is before you go in there. You don't want to be surprised.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially if you have, you know, more and more these days, you know, you see these compromises at stores. You know, I know Target had one and a Home Depot had one, and so, you know, people are opening up credit in your name and you have no idea until you go and look at your credit report, and, you know, there's maybe all kind of things on there that are not yours, and or it may be stuff on there that should have fallen off, and, you know, that would have been paid, that is still showing up on there and maybe dinging your score as well. So you want to get a handle of, you know, what your credit report looks like, what's on it, and then also your credit score. So, you know, said, in this day and age, you know, you just don't know. There's just so many scams out there that people, you know, the hacking and all of this that can get access to your information. You know, it's, and then also, if, you know, what I have read a lot as well, is that if you have younger children, you know, they have socials, people will pull socials for young kids and apply for credit. I don't know who's not checking these things, that this child is five, why are they applying, you know. That's beyond the point. I'm not sure why they're not checking, but, you know, you can find out, you know, when you go and, you know, you get something for your child that they have some credit card out there for 10 years, and you're like, what?
Steve and I had a situation like you're talking about, about 15 years ago. It really took us by surprise. We moved to Galena, the town that we lived in now, and we went to a national bank in town to open a checking account, and they refused to let us open a checking account. Now, I have never heard of a bank that refused to let you open a checking account, but they said it was because we had derogatory credit, and we don't know what you're talking about. And then it turned out that Steve's social had been stolen by somebody who went and used that to buy a car, who then they never paid on the car. And we actually, in a couple of months after this moving in, we actually had a repo guy come to the door to take back this car that we had not bought. We had to, like, open our garage door and say, see, the car is in here. Do you see that car you're looking for? So it really is important to I hate the fact that our world has become to be like this, but you know, we were totally flabbergasted by the fact that his credit that his social had been stolen. You know, that was just
I know, yeah, and it's that's the thing about it. Until you go and to do things on your own behalf to try to get credit or open up accounts is when you find that piece of information out, because they'll use your social, but then they'll direct the the credit card statement or the bill to their location. They don't have to pay it. They don't care because
No,
it's under
no.
somebody else's credit. But you won't
Right.
even see any of these statements that are, floating around because,
No,
it's going
we had
somewhere
no
else.
idea until
Yeah.
the bank said, "No, we do not want to work with you." I'm going,
Yeah,
"Really?"
never heard, like you said, never heard of a bank not wanting to take your account. That must
Right.
really be a bad derogatory report, if you do
Well,
that. So you don't want to get caught off guard like that.
what they said is that they were a national bank, and that if we would go to a state bank, a state chartered bank,
Okay.
that the state bank has less stringent rules. I don't know anything about that, but that's what the story that they told us. So maybe you know about national banks being stricter than state. I don't know, but.
Yeah, well, I know, some banks can have, a lot of institutions have, certain criteria that they deal with. And, if you have over, a certain score, then yeah, they may not want to, have you as a liability on their books, I guess, is what they look at. But yeah, the credit score, credit report thing, in terms of your financial wellness is really, up there in terms of key and learning how to, navigate, your finances, because, at some point you're going to
Right.
want credit. So you need to, know how even how it all works. There's a portion of your score that deals with, how timely you're paying your payments, how much you have debt to outstanding debt ratio that you have outstanding. So if you have your card, you don't want to, run it up to the maximum. You want to make sure, you keep a proper balance on how much you have outstanding debt and how much you have on there. So, just overall becoming wise about your credit score, your credit report, how they're viewing your, how they're scoring actually your credit and how what elements are in your credit score would really, be wise to know. So, you know how they came
Exactly.
up with that particular score. Yeah.
Right. Yes. No, a few years prior to that, Steve had gone to buy a car and they ran his credit score, and then the salesman said, "You can have any car on the lot." So he was used to having good credit and totally
Yes.
flabbergasted by this story. But let's move on to tip number five, save money for emergencies.
Yes, everybody needs to have some type of cash reserve. And we know things happen, and with emergencies, which kind of ties in with, knowing your credit score if you're going to be out and, getting credit cards and things like that to pay for emergencies that pop up because you don't have the cash. That's why, saving some money for those things that pop up so you don't have to use your credit cards and build up a lot of debt is really key when you're dealing with your financial wellness. So, the rule of thumb, is really 3 to 6 months worth of your living expenses in a cash reserve type account. That can be savings, it can be your checking account, money market, some type of CDs, things that are fairly liquid that you can get to without penalty. Maybe the CDs may have some penalties, but if it's short term, you may be able to get at it pretty quickly. But you want to have something set aside. You don't want to have to rely on extension of credit cards to in order to pay for these emergencies. Because then what you don't have the money, the credit is just an extension of that. So you're overspending in essence because you don't have the money to pay for that. You're using somebody else's credit in order to pay for those emergencies. You don't want to be in that situation if at all possible. So that's why saving money for emergencies is really important. Now I know, not everybody is, in that situation where they can, put aside, for things to pop up and they may have to use credit, but what I'm saying is really try to have some type of cash reserve, even if it's a small amount. The minimum, like I said, being 3 months of your living expenses. So these are things like, if your car needs to be repaired or you know, your cat gets sick and, you know, you have to pay for, you know, surgeries and things like that. I had a lot of clients with a lot of pet issues last year. So had to take a lot of money from emergencies, you know, for that. So that's why that came up. But, you know, it was there to use for that, and she didn't have to use a whole lot of, you know, credit cards for that.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make sure you have a comfortable cash reserve amount for things that pop up in your situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really good advice. And I think one time in the past you said that if you're a person that's having trouble coming up with a savings, look at that line where you're talking about the 20% debt versus savings. So if you could pay off your debt, then the money that you've been using to pay off the debt, you can then put that into savings.
Yes, and then you can put that into savings. Yeah, that's the whole structure that you want to make sure you don't overextend, that you have to use your credit because, you know, that's money that could be going someplace else, you know, either, you know, to one of your financial goals or extra savings and things like that. So, you know, once you have paid down your debt and you have freed up cash flow, that's where you start sticking that, you know, you don't want to start, you know, I freed up $400 because I don't have a car note anymore. You don't want to start spending that extra. You don't want to start, you know, increase your lifestyle to that. Now $400 is going to something else. You want to make sure it's being used accordingly, either to extra one of your financial goals and or cash reserve emergencies. Because we know how it is when people get extra cash flow and or raises, they start elevating their lifestyle because now they have more money to deal with versus I'm going to start maybe saving, live off of the same that I have now been doing, but the extra goes into some type of savings program or one of my financial goals to work towards that.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. That I think we probably covered that one fairly well. So let's move on to number six, get tax advice.
Yep. So we're coming up on April 15th. We're only a few months away, and I'm sure everybody's been getting those tax documents in the mail like I've been getting. And I've just been, you know, tagging them and putting them in the folder so I can deal with it later. But, you know, getting proper tax advice is really a good thing. I know a lot of people use TurboTax and, you know, Tax Cut and a lot of things like that, which is probably okay for, you know, fairly simple, you know, tax returns. If you're a situation where you have, you know, a little more things going on like rental properties or you have a business or, you know, things like that may be a little more complicated, it's probably best to try to get someone to give you advice on how the best to manage your particular tax situation. So you don't want to take a guess at that. So getting proper tax advice, not just during, you know, the tax season, all year-round tax advice is really good, especially, you know, for, I know yourself and myself, you know, being self-employed, you know, it's an all-around year thing. You know, you got to put your quarterly taxes away, and, you know, there's expenses that you could, you know, time at a certain point of the year to buy or not buy and things like that. So you want to have someone there that you can really lean on when you need proper advice and not really just kind of doing some research on your own or guessing, because the tax rules change from year to year on what's deductible, what's not deductible. You know, rules change on, you know, what applications are going to be this year and may not be this year. So you want to make sure you have somebody there to inquire about the advice throughout the year, not just tax season. So those are usually the tax preparers who will just prepare your return and not give a whole lot of tax advice. They give you advice. It's been solid, but if you listen by the year, whatever the allocator situation is, tell you not to say you may want one tax and say your parents came with their share, but you're not paying more than you have to, or ways to take advantage of and you know, the tax rules are, like, change of year to year, so you never know what they would be.
payroll is going to make sure you have a proper tax place when you go in the front door for next month and that form of debt.
Okay. That sounds self-explanatory, I think. I might come back to that one a little bit later, but let's go on to number seven right now, plan for retirement.
Yeah, and it's, you know, kind of where we opened our phone call is that, you know, a lot of people are kind of behind the curve with planning for retirement. You know, we deal with our day-to-day lives, and sometimes it's hard to imagine that, you know, at some point we want to, you know, retire and not have to work. But we're used to just dealing with our day-to-day finances is that, you know, we don't set aside enough sometimes and or plan accordingly for kind of life after work situation.
Mm-hmm.
So really putting a proper plan in place for, you know, the what happens after I stop working lifestyle. So if you are, you know, have an employer, you know, making sure you're taking advantage of the 401k plan or 403b or whatever you have access to through your employer's sponsored plans. And if it's if possible, especially with boomers, 50 plus, you're allowed to do catch-up provisions so you can put in even
mm-hmm.
more money towards your retirement. So if you're able to, making sure you're taking advantage of as much as you can, put it to your retirement plans. And even if you have, you know, IRAs, making sure you're contributing to that on an annual basis. So really having a proper structure on a savings program for retirement, but also knowing how much you need. Because what I find a lot of times is that, you know, there's, you know, so many things that are out there to tell you you need this number and you need that number. And I always tell people that you're not making number is specific to your lifestyle. What do you want to accomplish in retirement? You know, are you going to downsize? Are you going to get a vacation home? Are you going to be traveling? Are you going to, you know, do all of these different things? And then your number will be that versus, you know, some people throw $1 million, $1.5 million up in the air. You know, that's arbitrary. So you really have to make sure you run the numbers yourself, or if you're working with a professional, have them run what is your number on, I want to retire at 65 and, you know, given some assumptions, you would have a 30-year retirement and, you know, you want to live here and, you know, you want to spend this much per year and all of that. And then you come up with a number. So, you know, just like in, you know, point number two with your financial goal, you need to kind of know what the target is and what you're working towards. So knowing how much you need to save towards retirement, and then making sure you have the proper programs in place that you're saving towards. And then, you know, just like I mentioned before, with when you get those raises, not come moving up in lifestyle, really maybe putting 1% or 2% more into your 401k from that raise versus, you know, take-home pay because you've been living the same lifestyle. You know, you may be able to put a little bit more towards retirement. So looking at ways that you can, you know, save is the best thing that you can do and have a game plan. You know, a lot of times people don't have that, not just financially, but also what are you going to do, you know, in retirement? You know, I have, you know, a lot of, you know, colleagues that I work with who do what they call retirement lifestyle planning. Because, you know, okay, what kind of hobbies or, you know, what am I going to do with my life? You know, you got, you know, 24/7, you know, you don't have to be anywhere. And so,
right.
You know, how are you going to fill your time? So a lot of times people don't plan even that. And, of course, the money piece is very important. They really consider that. But sometimes they don't even really consider the lifestyle point of that. You know, I always use my sister as an example. She retired earlier from the government at 55. And then, you know, a year later, 2 years later, she's working someplace else because she really didn't have, you know, a game plan on what am I going to do, you know, with my life, you know, 24/7 where I don't have to be anywhere. And she just got bored to death, you know, and two years into retirement. So she's, you know, she's not working a lot, but she's working, you know, part-time some places.
Mm-hmm.
So having some type of, you know, strategy along with, you know, what do I have to have financially, but what do I want to do from a lifestyle choice as well. And, you know, kind of both of them kind of married together because, you know, depending on what you want to do, you know, also has, like I said, a price tag to it. So if you have, you know, if you're going to travel X amount of times per year and or you have a vacation home, you know, in other parts of the country, you know, some things like that, but having an overall strategy for the retirement.
Excellent. I think that is so important. And I think a lot of us, and I'm probably guilty of this, just think, you know, retirement's out there somewhere. It's very nebulous. And I don't really sit down and say, well, you know, I'd really like to have a second home in, say, Mexico. And, you know, I'd like to be able to be spending 6 months of the year there. I'm just making this up because I don't like to be hot, so I'm not sure I would like to be in Mexico. But you know, what I'm just saying is I haven't really ever put together a strategy of what I see myself doing in retirement. So I'm totally unprepared financially for it since I have no clue what it would be. But along with that, I think you've talked in the past about that you can sometimes play catch-up when you're planning for retirement. You can put extra money that you might have gotten from that raise that you were talking about. You know, you could put extra money into your IRA or your 401k. And I believe I heard somewhere that the amount for that might have gone up.
Yeah, I have to look at the numbers for this year, but if you're at a 401k program, if you're over 50, the maximum plus catch up, I believe, is $22,000 that you can put in. It should be about $6,500 for IRAs if you're over 50. So they let you put, you know, more money, you know, the older you get towards towards retirement. They figure, I guess, if you're behind the curve, you know, you might as well be able to put in as much as you can. But yeah, it's, you know, definitely look at the at your employer and how much you're allowed to put in. And then, of course, you know, if you have a company that matches, you know, that's even better.
Right.
So, you know, that's kind of free money that they would match with what you put in or up to a certain percentage of what you put in really makes a really nice nest egg for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I think we probably covered that one fairly well. So let's move on. I want to make sure we get all of these in before we run out of time here. Let's move on to your tip number 8, which we've alluded to a little bit before, but it still needs to be discussed on its own. It was pay off debt. You know, we talked about that a little bit with the 20% debt and savings line. But
yeah, and then we, you know, of course, you know, we talked about it with credit, but, you know, paying off debt, you know, especially I really emphasize if you're going into retirement, besides probably a mortgage, you really want to try to be as debt-free as possible because those are, you know, extra dollars that can be used for, you know, your retirement lifestyle versus going to pay down, you know, credit cards or, you know, auto loans and all of these things. So you want to make sure, you know, you pay it off accordingly. So I have some clients, you know, if we start 5 years prior to retirement, we look at all of the debt that they have. Are there ways that we can have, you know, things paid off in that five-year period? If not, you know, what do we have to do in order to do so if we can? And then also, you know, are there things that we can pay off and then maybe some, you know, a little bit that we can keep? But trying to have an overall strategy to pay off your debt prior to retirement. And, of course, you know, just with regular, you know, living, you know, if you're not retired, you know, all of those resources going towards, you know, debt and credit card can really be stressful on a lot of people. So you want to be able to, you know, sleep at night. So, you know, paying off debt or having some type of way that you're going to pay off debt. If you're going to accumulate it, you know, just don't, you know, slap down a credit card and say, okay, I'll deal with it later. Have a way that, you know, if you put on $2,000, what time frame am I committed to paying this off and then, you know, put together a payoff or a debt reduction strategy in order to pay it off as quickly as possible. So you never want to go in blind on, you know, I'm just spending, you know, all of this and accumulating debt. Have some type of way in order to structure to pay off your debt efficiently.
Could that include, not that I think I'm wanting to advise people to do this, but could that include taking on a second a part-time job or something of that nature while you're still working?
Yeah, I mean, any way you can get extra resources into the house that you know, if it's, you know, if you have a lot and you don't see where there's a whole lot of ways to deal with it, you know, if you have skills that you can get a part-time job to pay it off, that would be good as well. Also, you know, back to number one with cutting unnecessary expenses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's ways to free up cash flow, you know, from there to put on extra,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you can accelerate your debt payments, that's beneficial as well. That's why I go through that exercise with a lot of people is, you know, if you have X amount of debt, but you have all of these expenses and some you can cut out or, you know, reduce. Like I said, notorious for, you know, the eating out is always one of the things that
mm-hmm.
I always see, or, you know, going, you know, 4 or 5 times a week to Starbucks or whatever coffee shop or whatever, you know, can I do 2 and then save some of that and then I can put extra and save really trying to find what I call an accelerator margin, which means,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever money that I'm currently putting on my credit card, if I can free up maybe 150, maybe 200, and I can knock down my debt as really quickly as possible with an accelerator of extra money that I found that I already had,
mm-hmm.
I'm just now reapplying it to pay off my debt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that makes sense. And mm-hmm. it's amazing how much money if you're buying at Starbucks or the local coffee shop that's a daily purchase, you know, just
mm-hmm.
thinking of taking your own mug of coffee to work with you is an amazing savings. I think around here, I generally can buy, you know, Starbucks coffee at the grocery store, you know, the grounds that I would make my own with, probably like $8
mm-hmm.
for a 12-ounce bag. And how many cups of coffee does that make? I have no idea, but hundreds, I think. So
yeah.
So
versus, then, you know, probably buying the $5 latte that you get per day. That
mm-hmm.
can add up, you know, over time.
Exactly.
So, you know, not trying to take away anybody's Starbucks, but, you know, just maybe not as much where you can, you know, maybe free up $100 or so, you know,
mm-hmm.
especially if you have that habit that you're doing it, you know, every day or every other day. You know, look at, you know, back to, you know, looking at your overall spending. Look at that once you've kind of put it down into maybe Mint or any other resource for cash flow management. And then you can kind of see, you can categorize where, you know, you're spending your money. You know, if that turns
mm-hmm.
out to be a number that you're like, I can do something else with that, then that's where you would reallocate some of those resources to that.
Okay, good. Now, your tip number 9, review risk management and company benefits. And including in risk management, you talked about insurance programs.
Yeah, what I mean there is that a lot of times, especially, you know, people working at employers, they get company benefits, and then, you know, maybe during open enrollment, you know, once a year, they'll sign up for the same stuff, but they never really review what's new or what's going away or is this stuff increasing in price. So they never really take a look at, you know, the company benefits on a whole, on what
mm-hmm.
I have access to, but also is it still valid for my particular situation and my family, or are there new things that the company has introduced that, you know, because they just still kind of throw you a pack and say, okay, here's the benefits for this year, and then they just kind of leave it up to you to look through them. And sometimes you just like, what did I have last year? I had Aetna, and I'll sign up for that, and I had this, and I had,
mm-hmm.
and you never really look through. Is there a better plan for
mm-hmm.
me and my situation? Is it cheaper? Is it better? Those sort of things. Also, the insurance programs. A lot of times, you know, people, you know, I know you probably see all of these different commercials with Progressive and Geico and all of those. With auto programs, a lot of times, you know, I'm not telling people to go and switch auto insurances on a whim, but reviewing,
mm-hmm.
you know, what programs are available to you. And then also going through your own policy. You know, if you have an older car, there's some things that go away in your policy that you're paying for that, you know, you probably don't even have to pay for any longer. You know, if you have
mm-hmm.
an older vehicle, I think it's mechanical breakdown and stuff. It's minimal on how much they're going to cover, and they may be charging you an extra $75 for it or something. So you never know what these things are until you really kind of evaluate your insurance program. So, you know, your auto insurances, your homeowner's policy, your life insurance, all of your company benefits, really taking a look, like I said, especially during, you know, the whole kind of financial wellness towards the beginning of the year. You want to outline all of these things that you have in place. Are there things that I could be doing better with in order to get more bang for my buck? Are there things that I can reduce because they're not, they're no longer necessary in this particular insurance program? So really just kind of doing a whole risk management review on all of the insurance programs and benefits that you have out there so you can make educated decisions on, you know, am I getting the best that I can for my policy or am I overpaying? Are there other options that I can take advantage of? So really doing a whole risk management assessment of all of your programs.
Mm-hmm. Now, you could probably try to do this on your own, but I think it ties in with your tip number 10, which is assemble a financial team, because I would think that if you have a financial team and you maybe can meet with your team once a year or something, maybe that's not how you would suggest it, but I would think that your financial team would be able to help you to see where you might have overlapping coverages, where you have too much insurance because you're getting it from your company and you already maybe you really amped up your life insurance because you had young kids, but now if your kids are out of the home and on their own, maybe you don't really need to have that much life insurance. That would be something that I wouldn't be able to make a decision on by my own, but perhaps with a financial team.
Yeah, you know, you always want to make sure you have, you know, kind of a team of people that will be able to give you, you know, really good advice. We talked about tax advice, so you always want to have a tax accountant or, you know, someone on your team, a financial planner, probably a property and casualty person that deals with your auto and home, an estate attorney if you know, dealing with your wills or trusts and things like that. And all of them, you know, together, you know, I work with a lot of, you know, colleagues that, you know, of my clients. So, you know, when I meet with them, I say, you know, even if I'm not recommending them, I would like to know your tax accountant. I would like to know all of these other people that are in your life. So we can all coordinate, you know, just kind of be the quarterback and coordinate all of the different things that, that need to be done to make sure, you're doing the best that you can financially in every aspect of all of those areas. So, you know, if there is, you know, if I don't have the life insurance, they do have a life insurance person who's done that, you know, like you said, you know, maybe they had the X amount of life insurance when they had, you know, five kids at home, but now it's just a couple. Do they need to have this much life insurance? Are there ways to kind of reduce it down, maybe not pay as much? You know, are there ways to, you know, kind of put that into the financial plan, revisit that, the whole estate thing, just like taxes, a lot of the laws change on a continuous basis, so making sure you're aware of any law changes that come down the pike. So really just having a team assembled where if you're not, like I said, going to do it on your own, that you know where to go to get, you know, really sound advice for your overall financial wellness. So you're not, you know, just kind of, you know, picking and choosing, and then you're also looking at stuff on the news and you're reading things and somebody told you at the water cooler something, and, you know, you don't want to have piecemealed financial wellness. You want to make sure if you have access, really get a good team assembled so you know you're getting the best sound advice possible for your overall situation.
Do you have any advice? That's the end of your tips, I think, is assemble a financial team. But I'm curious, do you have any advice? How do you recommend that a person goes about assembling a financial team and finding a financial planner that they can really work with?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely want to do your due diligence. So, you know, if you want to work with someone that's, you know, in your particular area, you would probably, you know, take a look at, you know, of course, first and foremost is referrals from family and friends who, you know, have advisors, you know, so you want to start there first. If you want to do some research, you know, you can always go to, it's FINRA, FINRA.org. That's where all of the financial advisors have to register in your area. So you can do a search on, I want a financial advisor in this area, and then it's kind of a report card. It'll pop up and show you how long they've been practicing, if they have any compliance issues, if they've been in trouble, you know, stuff like that. You don't want to end up with someone like a Madoff or anything like that. Things pop up on that report that you can run. And then most people, you know, of course, you know, with the property and casualty and all of those, they'll probably just go to their local Allstate or State Farm and things like that. But you want to, you know, do your due diligence and speak to, you know, several people. You just don't want to, you know, unless they're referred and they're referred, you know, highly. But you really want to take advantage of a complimentary meeting with a planner, mm-hmm. or the state attorney or things like that they can kind of review, and then get a sense of if they're a match for you, because everybody mm-hmm. doesn't get along with, you know, everybody
right.
else. You know, I have people that I've met with that we just decided we just weren't a perfect fit, and that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to make sure this person, you know, is taking care of your overall financial wellness, that you're all mm-hmm. on the same page, that you get along, that they have the same philosophy, you know, things like that. So you want to make sure you do some really good research when you're putting together
mm-hmm.
your team.
Mm-hmm. All right. So in a way similar to how you would choose medical services, you
yes.
know, how you would choose a, like
exactly.
I'm in the
yes.
past year having my two knees replaced in the past year, mm-hmm. I talked to a couple of surgeons before I pick my orthopedic surgeon, and I'm really glad that I talked to more than one and didn't go with just the first surgeon that I met with. So I think the
mm-hmm.
what you're saying is the same kind of thing would apply with your finances as it applies with your health.
Exactly. Yep, because this person is, you know, on the journey with you in order to, you know, get you from point A to point B in terms of your, you know, overall financial wellness. So you want to make sure you have somebody that you can rely on, you can count on, that's, you know, educated, but also, you know, treat you as a person and not, you know,
mm-hmm.
a dollar figure. So
right.
you want to make sure that person has your best interest in heart and, you know, really look out for you and know what you want to achieve and not pushing their agenda on you. Because I know a lot of things happen with people like that as well. And you don't want that. You want to make sure
right.
you feel comfortable with this person.
So one of the things that you might investigate would be how they feel about risk. Because, you know, you might be
mm-hmm.
wanting to look into securities or stocks and other types of money market accounts. But you have levels of risk in those that some people might be more or less comfortable with. So hopefully, I think what you would agree with me is that finding a person who can understand what level of risk you're comfortable with.
Correct. Yes. Yes. You know, definitely. And then, you know, what I'd explained before, you know, we've been working together for quite some time. My conversation always starts with a values-based conversation. What are people? What do you want to do? What are you saving money towards? You know, what are you,
mm-hmm.
you know, what type of lifestyle do you want to lead? What is the life of your dreams? That sort of thing. That's kind of where I start my conversation with people,
mm-hmm.
because they're not just a number and they're just, you know, just not a set of products that I can offer to you. I need to know
mm-hmm.
and be comfortable with what matching things up with your values and having that discussion up front. And then, you know, kind of the money piece and matching that. But, you know, it doesn't make any sense if, you know, you have somebody who's, you know, just like your physician, if they're not listening to your needs, they do you no good. So, you know, it's the
mm-hmm.
same thing with your finances. If they're not listening to what you're trying to achieve and just kind of telling you a bunch of things, of course, you know, we're all educated in, you know, the financial
mm-hmm.
situation. And we can give you a lot of different things, but, you know, are you understanding? Are you a good listener? Do you have that person's best interest in heart? All of these things. It's what you really
exactly.
need to resonate with a, you know, a good person to be on your financial
mm-hmm.
team and make sure everybody is in alignment as well. So if you, you know, you get a financial advisor and or you get a state attorney. You know, usually with the team I have, it's kind of, you know, when people come to me, they may or may not have certain resources, but if they don't, I kind of refer them to people that I've worked with that are, you know, kind of share the same values and the same vision.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
we're all kind of in alignment together. So when you put the team together, everybody knows what everyone's doing and feel comfortable with it, with each other, and that we're all doing the best that we can for the overall wellness of the client.
And all going toward the same goal.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Well, that gets to the end of the points, that the 10 points that you had put down there, and we've discussed them in a little bit of detail. Is there anything that you'd like to go back and say more about any one of them, or anything you'd like to add, Pam?
No, I think the tips are, you know, all there. You know, that's why I wanted to, you know, have this call as close to the beginning of the year as possible, because this is where everybody's minds are in terms of, you know, really putting a really good financial house in order. So, you know, taking advantage of doing the tips early in the year and putting together a really good financial plan or game plan surrounding those tips would be really good. And the one key that I really want to emphasize is really making sure, you know, people do things financially in bite-sized pieces and don't wait until, you know, there's big things that you have to deal with, you know, taxes or towards the end of the year where you're dealing with your investments and stuff like that. You want to make sure you set aside some time, either, like I said, weekly or biweekly or monthly, however you want to do it, but take it in bite-sized pieces so you're not overwhelming yourself or becoming stressed with it. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
putting financial wellness on the forefront of your life and then putting it into an area where you could do it on a more frequent basis, but also make it fun and don't make it a chore when you do it.
Okay. Excellent. Well, thank you, Pam. As usual, it's been great talking to you this evening. I appreciate you being my guest for this great discussion of tips that all of us should be paying attention to, and all of us want to achieve the goal of financial wellness. So I really appreciate that you got this scheduled, that we were able to put our schedules together so that we could get this at the
mm-hmm.
at the front of the year here, and
yep.
can't wait to figure out what you and I will talk about next. But
right now, thank you very much for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. So I'm going to thank everyone who's been listening to this for joining us, and if I want to make sure that they know how to reach you. So any of our listeners has a question after this call, you can feel free to email them to Pam at Pamela@JacksonSams.com. That's JacksonSams.com. Or go to her website, which is www.JacksonSams.com. She has a wealth of free information on her site on a wide variety of financial topics. And one point that I saw that's on your site is something that I think is really critical. I'm quoting exactly from the site, Pam. It says, "The most common cause for financial failure is procrastination. So we encourage you to explore our site and begin changing your situation and start a plan for a better financial future." So that goes along with your saying we need to do this the sooner in the year, the better. And
correct.
And so if anyone would like to know more about NABBW, the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, you can find us on our website, www.nabbw.com, our forum at Boomer Women Speak, and we have a Facebook page at facebook.com/NABBW. So, again, Pam, thank you very much. Thanks to our listeners.
Thank you.
This concludes our call for this evening. Good night.
Goodbye.